Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good morning. How are you?
Fine. This morning, Mr. Allen, coming to us from the Twin Cities of Indianapolis and St. Pauli. Yeah, a lot going on. Everybody getting ready for the big election. We were in the production meeting before we went on the air talking in term time. You've got some observations about it looks like that the blue wave may not be the blue wave and the red wave may sweep over. But why don't you talk on that, and also the phone lines will be over. But what's your thinking about what's being said? Look like some friction, you say, inside of the Democratic Party on a national basis?
I would have to agree. Our caller number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, I'm seeing a lot of movement on social media. And then this week in Washington, D.C., there was a march by Democrats to leave the Democratic Party and vote Republican. It's not saying that, you know, these Democrats are going to become Republicans, but giving black folks a choice. Another option to see what happens. It's just like a litmus test, you know. We go to the polls, people of color, and you vote Democrat. And here American blacks have been doing it for years to no avail, and economic success, social success, unemployment lowered and things like that. And it always seems like it's a promise and a smile. And that's my personal opinion. And again, you know, we're not going to tell you what to think, and hopefully you'll learn how to think. And go to the polls and do the right thing. But something has changed, Mr. Edwards, and you're just seeing this this strategic movement toward getting Democrats to just walk away just this one time and see what happens, see if there's any different, if there's any change. And a lot of the candidates out there are saying if they don't do well for the people, they're not going to run again. It's the people's decision. So I kind of like that move. I think that's pretty interesting. On social media here locally, I see a lot of the hardcore DFL people on social media considering it, at least through the postings on social media. And I was shocked to see a couple of young ladies says, yeah, you know, I'm not voting Democrat this time in Minneapolis, in North Minneapolis, in South Minneapolis.
Now, let me just ask you this, though, Don, because we all went through this in 2016, and actually it's been going on longer than that. The American public really is sophisticated enough to recognize it. Of course, I can well remember the history indicating prior to 1932, we wouldn't think about voting for Democrats. And we was all, quote-unquote, Republicans. I mean, my grandparents, as an example, were staunch Republicans, if you will, and didn't get anything out of that. They was lynching and hanging us and et cetera, and segregating us and et cetera. So it looks like I've always been in the position that we probably do better to have a third party, even a fourth party, do it like you do it in some of the European countries. Kind of the parliamentary form of government where you have to build coalitions if you want to stay in power. I mean, I believe, like, let's just take Merkel in Germany as an example. She's popular, but she stays in power because she has to do coalition building. And it's one of the things that Americans are not very artistic at doing. They don't want to admit it, you know, particularly white America doesn't want to admit it. But we are not well versed in the coalition building. But your analysis is interesting. You know, if black folks decide to go out and vote for the Republican Party, that's their thing, if you will. They're basically following the footsteps of the Mexicans and the Latinos. Of course, you see what it's got there. By the way, what was your take on the president kind of stumbling up there, talking in terms of opening fire on the caravan that still won't be here for a couple of weeks? Do you think that, that the president will would make that kind of misstep to fire on that group?
Well, I was reading about that, and I hope that wouldn't happen. You know, but then again, if you know their people are throwing rocks and things like that, there's still no reason to fire upon the caravan. And I wish that President Trump would look at this as an opportunity rather than a crisis, because he could shut every critic down in the United States by saying, okay, you're coming here from South America. You made this long track. We're going to give you amnesty. We're going to let you into the country as long as you do X, Y, and Z. Now, if he did that, that would be amazing. That would shut a whole lot of folks down. But you don't find that kind of process right now in the White House, or that kind of commitment to people in general in the White House, when, you know, America was and is the melting pot. You're supposed to come here and have a dream. But on the flip side of that, I'm seeing all these bills in these states being passed to educate immigrant children. And while our Black American children sit in the schools rotten, you know, not learning, we're graduating functionally illiterate.
So, the Negro, as what you call it, Brother Johnson said 70 years ago, the continued miseducation of the Negro. Well, we're in a great state, though, here, broadcasting from the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Don and Ron program. We're in a great state that does just a great job on faking, if you will, making it appear that the great liberals and et cetera. That's a part of and moving over to that one. And again, the phone lines are already open. Moving over to the contest for Attorney General of the state of Minnesota. Mm. It looks like Ellison and Wardlow are in maybe pretty much a dead heat. I don't know. The congressman was on a radio program here, talk radio program, black talk radio program from the Twin Cities. What was your take on that, Don? You heard?
Well,
him,
I was a little bit. I tuned in. I wasn't listening, and I was made aware, Mr. Edwards, that he was on the air. So I tuned in, and I mean, Congressman Elston was talking like, you know, oh, I'm part of the hood. I am the hood. I work through the hood, and you know, I'm gonna make sure that your concerns and your needs are met, and all this black power umgawa. And the only time we hear that from Congressman Ellison is in the election year, about 2 weeks before the election, on that particular community radio station. You don't hear it on WCCO. You don't hear it on or KSTP. You don't hear it on Carry 11 or any of the other television or radio stations. But when he gets there, you know, and that's called pandering, by the way, the scientific term. And I think it's pretty disingenuous by him to even do that when he knows good and well the health clinic that sits across the street from where his headquarters, his office is like poor. You know, 91% of the people are 174% below the federal poverty line, and he's been in office since 2006. And my goodness, building a new building and remodeling that area around the Urban League is not helping the neighborhood, the people in the neighborhood. You know,
well,
and so
we had a caller here who is clearly a staunch supporter of the Democratic Party and the congressman, et cetera, who was telling us how many of the African Americans were working on both of those major projects there on the corners of Plymouth and Penn. You know, I was just trying to get a feel on when that documentation was going to be sent to us. Remember, we were promised that they were going to send the documentation, because they were also talking about the wonderful pact that had been put together by the head of the Urban League, Mr. Belton, and how they were working closely with the leadership of the of Thor Construction and the Thor's World headquarters and et cetera. And I was just trying to get a feel that with the kind of employment that we're being told, starting back with the People Stadium, that big, beautiful facility down there, that allegedly, you remember we talked on the previous programs over the years that we were being told that as many as 2,700 Negroes were being employed out of a workforce of 7,500, that 2,700 African Americans were working on the site. We were given almost those same numbers when they built the Twin Stadium there also in downtown Minneapolis. Can we ever get a certified, you know, set of documents that indicate all these black folks that have all these jobs and all these businesses? Because the only thing I really see going up is that we've got a surplus of cafes. We're really into the cafe business. Soul food place going up left to right. But I'm just trying to get the feel, Mr. Allen. I mean, I hate to kind of agree with the right, if you will, but I'm trying to get a feel on where all of this money, I mean, we were told, and nobody has talked about it since the Star Tribune came out and said that there was at least $47 million that went into the colored community, the black community, the Negro community. And I'm just trying to figure out where the $47 million.
Yeah, $45 million. Yeah, it's funny you say that, Mr. Edwards, because now that I think about it, the only pomp and circumstance we got from our local black Northside newspaper and the Star and Tribune is when a restaurant opened. A restaurant does not employ maybe 10 people in those neighborhoods. And it seems like anything like a restaurant or a barber shop or a beauty shop or a nail shop is the limitation that they would go. Where has the Asian American Economic Development Center here in the Twin Cities has opened a slew of functioning businesses that hire 50 to 100 people? And they had an article, Mr. Lenny Chisholm had it up on his page, where this economic development, what do you call it, incubator workshop are actually turning out
incubators,
businesses.
Incubators
in the Asian community that can have the capacity of hiring everybody who lives on the streets behind the place, 50 to 100 people that need, if they need jobs. Whereas in the black community, our Council of Minnesota's of Black Heritage is all but silent, dead, shut down, extinct.
Is this still around? So is this still around? Because I haven't heard anything from Mr.
Terrell. Yeah, I looked every now and then.
Since they ran him up out of that meeting back in June after African American brother was shot and killed by the police. I really haven't heard anything from Mr. Terrell or his group. Are they supposed to be quiet in an election year? Is that what this is all about?
Oh, absolutely. And the focus, Ms. Edwards, on the Council of Minnesota, the Council of Minnesota of African Heritage, has been the voter, get people out to vote. And it's really funny because I ran into some people from Education Minnesota, and they said, and they won't tell you flat out that it's totally Democrat, 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 but they'll send out brochures to all their union members, and there's not one Republican on any of the paperwork. And I had
I know that makes y'all on the right a little bit concerned about that. By the way, number 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904. It is the Don and Ron program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Man, we got so much going on, and didn't want to cut you off on that time, but we've got so much we want to try to touch on. We've had a terrible week of violence here, big gun battle up around 34th and Girard, which is in North Minneapolis. Something that you only see probably in places like Chicago, African-American man, five of them, shot, gun down, big gun battle, if you will, for close to 50 shots fired. The folks were removed from the hospital there, Big North Memorial. Of course, they didn't have any choice. I mean, the hospital must protect all of their employees and, more importantly, their patients, but they had to do a lockdown at the big hospital, if you will. But, I'm watching them. They still were cleaning up the blood and et cetera. So I'm hearing all that, and I'm kind of wondering, with all of this prosperity that we are being told is in place, why it is that there's such frustration amongst our young people, if you will. Now, not all of them. I mean, we have a group of young African-American, female and male, doing some things, but, it looks like it's kind of balanced itself out, and we can't seem to get away from the violence, if you will. A lot of money being poured out. I'm looking at some individuals who have special units, if you will, that are on the streets of our beloved city to maintain peace. And I'm hearing now folks have run out of money. I mean, I'm trying to figure out, couldn't be running out of money. We got too much money coming in, right? Am I wrong here or what? Because getting the phone lines is open, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards, because, I mean, there are people that are saying that, you know, there's money here, there's money there, and we can do this and we can do that, but there's no end results. There's no, how can I put this? I haven't seen a substantial growth myself personally since 2008. Not that there was one in 2008, but there was a lot of decisions made in 2007, 2008 that was supposed to affect us in 2018 and 2019, from the state legislature all the way to the nonprofit planning, from the Urban League Gateway community engagement to their highway heavy workforce program. And I'm on all these listservs for these emails from these state agencies, and I see MnDOT all the time sending out emails talking about, we need this, we need this many people. And I don't know if there's a connection where the Urban League's Gateway to Pathway to Success or Gateway to Prosperity is even still running, or if they have the capacity to even go out and filter and select candidates to send them over there to these jobs. But if you look at all the job boards locally, I mean, there's jobs like roofing, plumbing, contracting, journeyman stuff that should be coming out of Summit Academy OIC. And then there's other jobs, laborers, that start out between $15 and $25 an hour. People are ramping up for the snow season, and I don't see that information getting to the people that might not have the internet, that might need a job in the areas where black folks live.
Well, maybe handlers will be brave enough to call in and help us along, if you will. And we started out really talking about your observation about Congressman Keith Ellison running for Attorney General in the state of Minnesota, and his conversations, overviews, and commitments. If he wins, I'm looking forward to seeing how he will take on President Donald Trump, because that's one of the things that he said, and he was kind of confronted with that declaration by his opponent from the Republican side, from your side, from the right, if you will. And the question that we asked in the production meeting that you certainly raised to the staff is that, what will be the first five issues that the new, if elected, that the new Attorney General for the state of Minnesota will take on, hitting the ground running? I mean, this is one of the things that you got to hear from these politicians, is that, you know, how will they hit the ground running? And I just don't know how that is happening, if you will. I didn't really hear that Sunday, but I know it must have been contained within the dark message. I mean, you know, that's the way I look at it. Again, though, those open, man, because I want to also congratulate Chief Nadella Arredondo, who the mayor has announced as and will be appointed to a 3-year term as the permanent chief, and of course, first African American in the 150-year history of the Minneapolis Police Department, etc. So, congratulations to Chief Arredondo, if you will. I hope that, though, he can find a couple of deputies and et cetera that show up at some of these events. You know, it was kind of embarrassing. John, I didn't, you know, really want to talk about it. It was kind of embarrassing what happened at the hospital there the other night with all those victims being brought in, that there was no high-ranking police personnel there. You know, I mean, that's always important. And I heard a story, a funny story, that one of the deputy chiefs, they were trying to reach him, and he wasn't answering his phone. You know what I mean? And at some of the others now, there was one gentleman who was a part of the special unit that is compensated. His name is Farone Brown, Sherrone Brown was there with members of a couple of the families. But other than that, I mean, I'm trying to get a feel on where everybody is at. I know there's been a lot of money that's been set aside. Sasha Cotton, Nicole Archibald and them working out of the mayor's office, the city coordinator's office, and et cetera. I understand that, what's her name, Lawson. I understand she's no longer in city government. Something happened up there, but, you know, sometimes those people have rifts, and, you know, you're kind of told to move on. But, you know, with this violence, I mean, we've got to get a handle. Now, here's what I do here. I hear that one of the there's only one black deputy chief, has indicated there will be a public meeting to discuss all this violence. And so that's Deputy Chief and Chief of Staff Art Knight, and they're going to have a big meeting. Now, I imagine a crowd like that, there's only two places, maybe three, in North Minneapolis where you can have this kind of gathering. One would be North High School, you know, the auditorium there. The second would be Shiloh International Ministry under our good friend Bishop Howe, and then probably the auditorium at Minneapolis Patrick Henry, right? But they were saying the Urban League. I said, oh, not Urban League. Couldn't hold no more than 60 people. So, you know, if you're going to talk about the violence, the safety of our children, the future, dealing with the violence and et cetera. So I just wanted to pass that on, you know, because a lot of times that information doesn't get passed to our community like it should. So they're talking in terms of this big meeting to deal with the violence. Okay?
Again,
no phone lines.
We have a caller. We have a caller.
Let's get the caller.
Live on
Let's
the
get
air.
The
Go
call.
Ahead. Caller, live on the air. Go ahead. Yes. Hello.
Gentlemen, good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
This
yes,
is Mr.
Sir.
M.
Go ahead, sir.
It's Mr. M, sir. Glad to be with you, gentlemen, this morning. But I did want to make a comment, especially with I do want to congratulate our new chief. I think that was a very good. Well, I think we needed that. But what that brings back to my mind is it takes me back to the days of the Mill City Five. Okay? It takes me back to the days where there was a push to really make a change, not only in the police, but in serving our community. I mean, so there is, you know, these elections coming up, all these things to me are tied together. We have an opportunity to actually get some good people and be. I want to bring up another name to Mr. Edwards, Mr. Ralph Remington. Right?
Yeah, Brother Remington did come back to Minnesota here about a year ago. He may have gone back to California. But go ahead, what do you have? What was your observation
about
Ralph
Remington?
Bring
that up. When you talk about hitting the ground running, I think that was an example of hitting the ground running. When Mr. Remington was on the council and things that were happening at that time, we had a great chief in Mr. McManus, but the thing is, they didn't want that. Those people were not supported. And I think that we have an opportunity now, and hopefully with Mr. Ellison, if he's able to win, and our new politicians, and this turning the page, well, we can improve these things in Minneapolis. I mean, the disparities, we already know all those things are there. It's that what is this group going to do about these things?
Yeah, let me do this for the purpose of historical facts and such. You happen to mention the Mill City Five. Probably a lot of folks out there may not know what you're talking about. They may think you're talking about a musical group. Mill City Five was a group of five African-American officers. Do you remember the names, Em? Do you remember the names of the five officers?
Oh, let's see. Lee Edwards.
That's okay. I'll give it to you. It was Arredondo. It was Hamilton. It was Adams, it was Edwards, no relationship, and it was Harris. Now, the situation is Harris and Edwards are no longer in the department. They took retirement, if you will. Rondo is the chief. Adams is a commander in the department, and Hamilton is a lieutenant who was working out of the 4th precinct. So I just want to kind of help people with what you said, because, I mean, really on a serious note, when you talk about the Mill City Five, you know, some of these folks who talk in terms that they know the history of our city, would identify them as a musical group. They sued the city of Minneapolis for
they sued and won.
Et cetera. Huh? Yeah, well, but to be clear, we want to be, see, on this program, we want to be clear and concise. There was $2 million. For whatever reason, they settled for $750,000. They left for $1.25 on the table, which I settled for $750,000, the Mill City Five. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
one of those people was the current chief of police, Madera Adondo, who the mayor just announced a couple days ago is being reappointed. Or excuse me, really, is being appointed to a 3-year term. And now is serving his own, quote-unquote, tenure, if you will. But just wanted to put that out there. But go ahead. You were saying hitting the ground running, Mr. M. I mean, so what do you see happening with the attorney general? Let's say Ellison wins the attorney general race. What five things do you expect to have him do?
Boy, that's a hard one because five is tough. You know, well, you know, like you were saying, he says he's going to take on the Trump administration. From this angle, I'm not sure how that would really work. I mean, but let's tackle this homeless thing here. Let's tackle the things that we're seeing right in front of us. Let's tackle these.
Good point. Good point. Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
I would just like to interject in the conversation. We have some more people on hold, but just to say this, you know, yeah, I'm looking at that homeless piece too. And the more time they spend outside, the colder it gets, the more people OD.
We had another death last night. Early yesterday morning. Oh, that's the fourth person to die in the encampment. That's kind of dangerous. Four people have died of overdose and et cetera. So I'm glad you brought that up, Don, because we want our worldwide audience to know.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty heinous with the city of Minneapolis passing all this, signing off on all this millions of dollars to house them, that these people aren't getting housed and they're still out there in the tent. And it's, I think it's supposed to snow today. But there are some systemic issues within that camp, within that community, as well as the black community, that are being overlooked, especially by the current congressman for the 5th Congressional District, Congressman Keith Ellison. But with that said, Ian, if you could just hold on, I need to bring someone in. He might get kind of loud with us.
Sure.
This conversation. Welcome, caller. This young man, Mr. Alfred Flowers, has a show on a community station here 8 weeks, and he was kind enough to share his interview with a couple of the politicians running for office. Good morning, Mr. Flowers.
Hey, good morning, Brother Allen, Mr. Edwards. You know, I was just sitting here listening in. And
go right ahead, sir. What's your observation, sir? Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Just on the encampment, and I like y'all observation on. I mean, we know it's they over there shooting up heroin and everything. How do that work? You know, it's supposed to be illegal to be doing drugs, but they contributing. Are they contributing to the death of some of these?
Yes, they are. Let me just cut in, Mr. Flowers, because you're one of the few people that we've been able to get to at least question this program. I first reported exclusively over a month ago that I was puzzled and still am puzzled by a police officer, a white officer by the name of Grant Schneider, who has been, of course, working with the leadership of the encampment. He's the one that got a lot of the food items and supplies, but he's also the one that got those tents. Some of those tents are really expensive. But he has been bringing in the needles, and it kind of reminded me of that sitcom that was on many years ago called The Wire, which dealt with the drug problem in Baltimore, Maryland. I don't quite understand that policy decision. Maybe the mayor and the city council can explain that to us, gentlemen. Even this morning, if you will, how that was considered to be kind of an acceptable practice as opposed to getting people off that drug. So I hope that helps you, Mr. Flowers, that there's a police officer that has been kind of assigned to make sure that the needles and things get there. And I'm like you. I just have a question about the legality of that. But go ahead, sir. What else do you have?
That there, and I was just wondering, because I know the city said they we're finna rebuild or rehab build the building off of Franklin over there. And I'm trying to figure out how do that work where they, you know, people are dying over there doing overdoses, but you are supplying them and saying that it's all right for them to be out there. So I don't know how that works. And there's a lot of black people out there, too. They talk about a lot of native, but it's a lot of blacks. And are the blacks going to be able to move into this new facility that they moving in, or is it just native?
You know, I think, sir, that's a great question. I think the mayor and the city council should be required to answer that. You know, I've only seen natives as spokespersons, and boy, that's a heck of a question. Will the African-Americans, as an example, be able to move into these facilities whenever they get built? Oh, hopefully they'll be built before the first blizzard. But that is a heck of a question. I would suggest to all of us that we need to reach out to the elected political leadership, the appointed leadership, the omnipotent leadership, if you will, and have them indicate, and, you know, by the way, think about this, Mr. Flowers and the other callers that we have, and I don't want to delay all of it. When this thing started out back in the summer, so there was plenty of time, early spring, there was about 50 to 60 over there. And people just kind of ha-ha'd and dismissed it. In fact, at one time, you had the same number over here as you got over in St. Paul. St. Paul's still around 60 or 70. Next thing you know, this thing exploded to over 400 people piled up in those facilities along the boulevard and et cetera. So here's what I would ask, Mr. Flowers. Maybe it's a question that you can ask on your program. Will people be designated to get that permanent housing? Will it be a lottery system, if you will, or will it be meeny, miny, mo? So what will be the process? I'd like to hear M's observation. Certainly Mr. Allen and I in studio can do whatever we want to do. But I'd like to know will families and babies and children have first priority, or will some politics come into play? Mr. Flowers, do you have any indication of how the system will work, how people will be selected to get into this new house?
No, that's why the one thing I'm hearing is that they gave them the money to rehab it, but they don't know who's eligible, whether you have to be Native American or we don't know, because the property is owned by Native Americans.
Red Lake, by the Red Lake Tribal. Yes, sir. You're absolutely correct, sir.
Yeah. So do we have to, you know, what's going to happen to the other people of color if it's a Native thing? I just didn't know. I was trying to get some insight on what's happening, because you just said somebody else died over there.
Died early yesterday morning, gentlemen.
And then if you remember,
sir, that's the fourth confirmed death. Confirmed death.
And was that where the county commissioner candidate LaDonna Sanders? That's where her son died at, right?
That's correct. That facility.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct, sir.
Yeah.
And there've
probably
been a couple more, because there've been a couple people found. But they've been found, you know, outside the encampment. In other words, they may have walked a couple of blocks and keeled over and expired, if you will. I think that the number is higher than the official four that are now certified. They've been certified as having died inside the camp, if you will, from overdose and et cetera. But I appreciate your confidence. Anything else, Mr. Flowers, for us? Appreciate getting one of our talk show associates to call in.
I just want to tell Mr. Allen on the education, ask him one question on education about when people want to become a educator, a black teacher, that got some of their credentials, do we know what they supposed to do then if you want to be a teacher?
Thank you, Mr. Flowers. Appreciate you calling in, my brother. Thank you.
Let me just get that from Mr.
Of course, you talk about that all the time, Don. I've got to say it to you on the right. about how difficult, particularly black male educators, how difficult it is to get them into the major school districts, the Anoka, Hennepin County, St. Paul, and Minneapolis.
Let me tell Al about that real quick. Let me answer his question real quick.
Go ahead, and
then we'll go to the next callers. We have a couple more callers holding. But Al, it's very difficult because people are looking at the school districts and blaming the school districts for not having enough black teachers. They're not looking at these universities or the teacher licensing process. If you go to the state of Minnesota, you have over 270 white women working in that building with 5 black women, 10 black men, not on decision-making levels. Okay, I got the data request report on the demographics of the people who work there. So you have a culture there that's not a culture that's apt toward helping people of color, especially black men and women, especially black men who want to be teachers. But it's not on the school district because, like myself, I went through 2 master programs at Hamline as the only black male in every one of my classes. There's no blacks in the pipeline. Plus, they want you to student teach for 6 to 12 weeks for free while you're in school, period. How many people do we know with the credentials to be a teacher that could take time off work and go teach somewhere, usually under a white female, for 6 weeks? Okay? You can't do that.
Right.
You can't do that when you're an adult. So there's a lot of problems. And the teacher's licensing program and the law, the way they change the law, the union steps in, I call it the Laura Ingalls Wilder syndrome. They don't want any black teachers. It is so difficult. Even today for me, I mean, I have to get to work at 5:45 in the morning just to stay ahead of the game Monday through Friday. And it's ridiculous, and we have to look at that. But we don't have any of our black leadership even talking about that because they're focused on the lower one-third of the community that's not going to ask any questions.
Right.
So I'll leave it at that.
All right, Mr. Flowers, all right. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, you said we got some callers. Let's get them in, man. Saturday morning.
Yeah, stand by. We've got another caller here. Caller, you're live on the air, 0911 is the last 4. You're live on the air. Who's calling and what's your question? Hello.
Hello, this is Paula Overby.
Hey, Paula, thank you for calling. This is
politician, U.S. Senate candidate.
What are you running for? What are you running for again?
I'm running for the U.S. Senate against Amy Klobuchar.
Okay, well, thanks for calling in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your campaign? We have a couple minutes here for you.
So principally, I'm organizing for the Independent Party. I see a failure of our political process. And so as a independent party needs 5% of the vote, according to state law, to become a major party, to have a voice in our political process.
Okay. So
that's
5% of the vote or to win?
Our goal this year is to get 5%. Yes.
Okay.
Nobody's gonna beat Amy Klobuchar. She's well liked. People tell me how nice she is.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Best
of luck out there, and hope the voters get out.
Yeah, we wish you the best of luck. And I hope there's a showing and you guys get your 5% because I know when you had the young lady a while back running for governor, they kind of just ignored her in debates and everything. And you've been in there. Go ahead.
I mean, the goal is to create an independent party, right?
Yes.
I see the neglect that we're getting from our politicians, from our political process, from both parties. I certainly see it in Yorkton, in the black community. We have some of the worst wealth inequality in the nation. I've been listening to the discussion about the homeless camp encampment. I mean, it's another symptom of the growing inequality of wealth in this country. They're not living up to their promises. And so the goal. I've been trying to reach out to Al Flowers recently, actually.
Yeah, he's on the line right now.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a daughter's program on Sunday. He's on Sunday from 1 to 2. You call KMOJ, radio station KMOJ, 89.9. But, Paul, we appreciate you calling in. We want to hear all candidates, if you will. Thank you.
Yep. And thank you for that very much.
All right.
Caller.
Go ahead, Miss Al. We got somebody else in the queue or online.
Last four. 4013 is your last four. You're live on the air. What's your name?
Larry Tucker.
Hey, Mr. Tucker. How you doing, sir?
Great program. Now, you know, I listen to all these discussions concerning what's going on in our community. My observation over the last 50 years, it doesn't make any difference who becomes chief of police. I was around in the 60s when the chief of police in my hometown tried to control the officers, and he was told where to go. And he wasn't very successful in doing anything. Number two, the economic process. If you don't have an economic base, you're not going to be able to make any changes. We have what my mom used to say, a lot of skim milk masquerading as cream. We have a lot of elite Negroes who want to be leaders and want to be spokesperson and do not understand the system. And they're not economically orientated. You're only going to have 5% of any cultural group that's going to be entrepreneurs. The rest of these people think all they need to do is to have a PhD, and they're going to be leaders. The other thing they need to say is that we can get our black kids to stop wearing their pants down to their knees, that our society and our system and our relationship with the youth will be different. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Mays, when I lived in San Francisco, would walk down Market Street. He was no longer the Say Hey Kid when he left Candlestick Park and walked down Market Street. I'm not going to say what they call Willie Mays when he walked down Market Street, but we can imagine what that word is. I think that we have people who they set these people up to be spokespersons and know good darn well that they're ineffective. You know, take a look at this, the meter program. You have this guy running the meter program that is not a business person. Do not think like a business person. Who now sit in the office and put together puzzles all day. You also have folks saying that you got these group of guys that say they own this building. The building is owned by the county. They have a very interesting scenario.
Let me just cut in a second because you're kind of. The building you're talking about is the Thor World Headquarters. Is that the building you're talking about on Plymouth and Penn? Is that the building you're talking about?
Plymouth and
okay,
Plymouth and
Penn. We need clarification and clarity. Go ahead, sir. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know for a fact that one or two American blacks who worked on that building said, in effect, that there was a lot of people that was charging 51 hours, 48 hours, and wasn't even showing up at work. Thor Construction is not a construction company. They're a construction manager company, and they can't manage anything. And I'll say that to them straight away. They're poor managers, okay? The scenario that they put that building together gets kind of complicated, but they do not own that building. Stop it. Then they have these ceremonial Negroes, as Roy Wilkins called them. Every time they get ready to do something, they bring out the ceremonial Negroes and hoping that they're going to solve our problem. All you have to do is put one or two of those ceremonial Negroes out front, and you think the problems are solved. They're not business people, and the business of America is business. And calling yourself Democrats or Republicans does not make any difference. It hasn't made any difference. And we need to stop. I talk to people on oftentimes they do not understand business. We're not taught business, and we're not being taught financing. Cut it out. The people that they got up front doing that do not know what they're doing. And I will say that to them.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Appreciate it to Mr. Tucker. Now we got some other calls holding. Appreciate that. Appreciate that insight.
Yep.
And Mr. Tucker,
yep,
when he was talking about his hometown, was talking about Omaha, Nebraska. Is that correct?
That is
the
correct.
Chief down there. Remember what you were saying? The chief wasn't able to get anything done. You were talking about Omaha, right?
That is correct. When
all
one
right.
officer.
Okay.
One other thing, when the officer said, when they told Officer A that they was going to fire him, and the other officers, Caucasian officers, told the chief of police in some very street language that if you fire him, we all going to quit.
Yeah, and this was a white chief, right? This had to be a white chief in the 1960s, right?
No,
white
it
chief?
Was a black chief.
Oh, was it? What was his name?
I forgot. I think it was Coleman. I don't remember, Ron. It's been a long
time
ago.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, all right.
But it was a black chief at that time,
okay.
And he was not able to control anything during that period of disturbance.
Wow.
And when the streets was burning. So
wow,
put somebody
yeah.
in there because of the amount of melanin or chromium they got in their skin
sure.
does not make any difference.
All right. Mr. Tucker, appreciate it, man. Thank you for calling in. Nice to hear your voice. We haven't heard you in a while. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Allen, you got another caller? Get him in if we got him. Let's
yeah,
program.
We don't have any more callers at this time, but I would like to pose a question since we have you, Mr. M, Mr. Flowers, still on the line here. The question I want to pose goes back to the homeless camp encampment over in South Minneapolis there, the one downtown Minneapolis by Sharing and Caring, and the one in St. Paul. Now, the city of Minneapolis specifically has over 500 vacant houses under their control, under CPED. What was the problem with not unleashing some of those houses? And some of them are ready to be, you know, people to move in. Why
well, you know,
we
Mr. Allen,
have
from this end, let me just say, I understand where you're going with it. We've been all the talk. That's a question that maybe Mr. Flowers' program or this program, maybe we can get the mayor and the head of, what is it, CPED, if they got anybody
mm-hmm.
down there, they've been playing music. You know, they need to come on the air, if you will, even go to one of the SAFE programs, WCCO, one of them. They need to tell that because my understanding, all of that housing has been spoken for. That is for profit development, if you will. And that's not no housing for no poor people. And definitely no housing for no African Americans, if you will. But, you know, I think that we as communicators have a responsibility to see if we can get our beloved mayor and the head of, and the head of CPED to come on and explain those 500 units that you're just talking about. I mean, that's a damn good question. You know, that's
well,
my
if I could chime in, Mr. M, I mean, we need to have a plan because – the problem is with the homeless situation, it continues to grow. I mean, I drove down Cedar and got off the freeway, and I saw these tents. I said, I've never seen this in Minneapolis. And now I see it all the way back around to Franklin Cords Adams grade school that I used to go to. And so it's growing. And so you need a plan that says, okay, you're going to have housing. Well, how are people going to pay their rent? How are they going to get jobs? How are they going to get the education? See, a financial component of this is a huge part of it. And the one caller that said, you know, we, you know, our current people don't know about finances, I subscribe
that
to
that. That was Tucker, Ms. Tucker. Yeah, yeah. He was absolutely correct. I wondered that question. But Mr. Allen has put an offer out there and a challenge, and that is these 500 units. How come they hadn't been made available? And because this problem has been known up since April. April, the city of Minneapolis has known that this camp was growing. Now, we repeat again, it was no accident that a Minneapolis police officer named Grant Snyder, see, no one will challenge that, has been carrying the needles out there, nice fresh needles so that they can shoot up. If I was the U.S. attorney, I'd be a little concerned about the possibility of violation of law. You know what I'm saying? But, hey, I'm just a black commentator. Go ahead,
I mean,
Joe.
That tactic of drugs, alcohol, I mean, that's an old trick, okay? That's been, you know, that's been kind of modus operandi. But I still say there needs to be a plan. If there's going to be housing to move people off of these, there has to be some type of subsidies for a while till they get themselves going. I mean, at some point, people have to be self-sufficient. If we continue to say that we're going to just continue to take care, we should take care. but we also should have a plan to steer people, and that starts with our education. It starts with our families. I mean, as that individual said about business not being taught, we're not taught how to, and we shouldn't be taught. We should allow our families to raise our own kids. But because what they do in the schools, which is a contributor, and also our social service areas like child protection, what have you, we are not building our community up. We continue to tear it down. So we have to kind of have our own plans and bring something to the table and say, this is what we do. That's my take.
You work for the county for a number of years, and you've touched on that quite frequently. Let me ask this question of anybody that's here with us. Should we not be concerned with the deaths? I mean, 4 deaths in about a month's time at this enclosure. And as I said, the real fact is there's been additional deaths. They have been individuals who were in the camp, you know, shot up, left, and died maybe a couple blocks away, and et cetera, and just kind of become a cold case. Should we be concerned about the conditions inside the camp that are leading to these deaths? Or is it just something we should just dismiss because these are homeless poor people?
What's you know, if I could just say, you know, if deaths do not get your attention, okay, if that doesn't get your attention, you know, who's listening? Who's listening?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this doesn't spur action, if this doesn't say this has to stop, and to do it, you know, we need to bring in Mr. Flowers. We need to bring in the community. But see, these people that come in with agendas, they just seem to be, and I won't say agendas, I'm saying ideas, and are for a change in our community. All we want to do is improve our condition. We want our kids to be educated. We want our kids to have a chance. We want to have adequate housing and an opportunity to get that. And we battle this thing.
I understand. Let me ask you a specific question.
It goes on and on.
I understand. Let me ask you a specific question because we've got a couple minutes left. And I know that you were aware of this and talked about it a number of years ago. It's being kept real low-key that there was a significant decision by the United States Supreme Court 8 days ago, and that in the case of the death of Terrence Franklin, United States Supreme Court has ordered the city of Minneapolis must go to trial. What's your take on that, brother? You followed the Terrence Franklin murder 5 years ago. What is your feeling? Do you feel that we will receive or see justice for Terrence Franklin and his father, who has done a hell of a job along with the attorney of record, Mike Patton, in getting this thing after 5 years, getting the United States Supreme Court to tell the city of Minneapolis, you're going to have to go to trial, lay out the evidence and the testimony and the death of this young African-American whose head was blown off in the basement at a house in South Minneapolis. Were you aware that the Supreme Court had made that decision, Em?
Well, I had heard, I had been following that. And you know, these things continue to go on for years, and they come to a fruition, and it ends up with a payout. I mean, the city of Minneapolis has paid out so much money because of the actions of their office. This is something that's always covered up, too. I mean, if people look at those numbers, and this is pretty much how it ends up. They continue to go running through the system years and years and years, and then they throw some money at you. You know,
yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, well,
it
looks like in this one, though, where initially the family had indicated they were prepared to settle for $1 million, the city told them to kiss their behind, and that they thought they would get a favorable response from the United States Supreme Court. My understanding is now that it's up to $5 million. That's the settlement figure, $5 million for the deceased, for his young son, if you will, and God bless Walter. For staying the course. And I have to give credit to Mike Patton and his law firm and the law firm that handled the appeal to the United States Supreme Court. But I've been fascinated by the silence from our leadership, gentlemen, that this would have, you know, at least on the surface, appear to be a victory for the family and the heirs of Mr. Franklin, if you will. But, man, everybody been quiet. I mean, well, wow. You know,
yeah.
We, we get a victory. Do you know, gentlemen, how rare it is for the United States Supreme Court to order a municipality or a jurisdiction to go to trial, particularly when they've appealed through the entire process? And so I just felt an obligation to lay that out, if you will. Minneapolis Star Tribune, who was aware of what had happened, wrote a very poor story last Saturday and last week. And by the way, there's been enough time because it was in last week's edition, Saturday's edition of the paper. But go ahead. Thank you, Em. But go ahead, Mr. Allen. Look like we're getting ready to wrap. What we got, man?
Yes. Well, we have about 4 minutes left, and I want to give Mr. Flowers another opportunity if he has anything to say before we disconnect and wrap up the show.
If I could ask a quick one on the encampment, is that city-owned property or do the state
no,
own
that's,
it?
That's a good question, Mr. Flowers. That's the state of Minnesota. In fact, that's the Department of Transportation, DOT. Good question. That is, the state of Minnesota owns that property where the encampment is at. Good question.
So they should contribute to whatever needs to be done, because the other guest was talking about subsidy to help the people, but the city that already coughed up $2 million to do a rehab on try to house them. So, how much we going to put in, and that's even more important about what they going to do with the African-Americans that's over there, because I'm hearing that they're not included in going in that new rehab building that the city paid for, and how that worked out.
I've heard that some of the Native Americans have been saying that the African-American community is the problem for the drug addiction over there. I think that's real unfair, if you will. But that's been the politics. You, one of the few people, Mr. Flowers, has raised the question about what kind of politics are going on. Again, I think that we should have an update from our mayor. Maybe that's something that could be talked about when they have this big meeting sometime in the next number of days to deal with all the violence that's going on across the city. But a damn good question. But to your question, I hope I answered it for you. The land is owned by the state of Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Wow. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Flowers. Take care.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir. All right. Well, there's nothing more we can bring forward. We brought a lot forward. I'm just kind of surprised, Mr. Albert, that there was some calls I was expecting that we was going to get from here locally, from the folks that maintain that we're always negative by reporting, negative kind of stuff. And, I was expecting to hear from some of them. But maybe they ain't up yet. Maybe they partied last night.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was a big event at the State Theater last night, and there was also a big event over at McAllister. So maybe folks was partying and drinking them bubbles and et cetera. So, hey, but, you can always get this on demand, right?
As soon as we get done, it goes up on demand for a podcast.
Yeah, man, so we want to get it up. How much time we got left, Mr. Allen? About a minute and a half?
1 minute, 40 seconds. 1 minute, 40 seconds.
All right, want to thank all of the callers that were on with us and have called in, Brother M, Mr. Flowers, and others. Hey, we'll be back next Saturday, the Ron and Don program, and you know what we'll be talking about? The election.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
who's going to win in that?
Next Saturday, Mr. Allen, all the numbers will be crunched. We'll know who's in control of the government. Yes, sir.
Yep, we sure will. We'd like to thank
everybody
for listening.
All right, take us home. Take us home, brother. Take care.